I'm Will Beecham, ICIS Chemical Business Deputy Editor. I'm here with Paul Hodges, Chairman of International eChem. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Will.
It's great to see you at EPCA again.
Yes, well, here we are again. Yes, indeed. First time was starting on a Tuesday.
Yes, that's very confusing. I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of big themes, big things impacting the industry this year, but the trade war, above all else, is rearing its head. Have you got any views on how it could affect Europe's chemical sector?
Yes, I think the thing we have to watch out for is displaced product. So partly that, of course, can be product that can't go from the States anymore to China and therefore will likely come to Europe. I'm thinking polyethylene, obviously, there. But there's also the second order effect. So if America isn't buying a lot of consumer goods from China anymore, and that seems to be the case at the moment, that the container ships that should be full going from China to the States for Thanksgiving and Christmas aren't full. So Northeast Asian, Southeast Asian chemical producers haven't got the business they'd expect in China, so they're turning around and exporting to Europe.
And Europe's the obvious target because the other regions are mainly export.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, it's easier to target Europe because we're a large market. The trade routes are there and so on. There aren't too many other options. And we're certainly seeing signs of that in product areas like ABS, where Northeast Asian producers who can't export to China anymore because they're not selling their finished products to the States are now turning around and selling it into Europe. Right. We don't know how disruptive that's going to be, but it obviously has quite a big potential.
It's already happening.
Yes.
Let's look at the US startups then. They've started. There's a lot more to come, about 4 million tonnes more new PE capacity.
Mm.
What's going to happen to that if it can't go to China?
Well, it's obviously going to run because the ethane that's the feedstock does need to be extracted in order for the producers to sell the natural gas. You can't sell high levels of ethane in natural gas because of its explosive risk. So it has to be extracted, and the plants have been built. Of course, the interesting thing is that some of the cost advantages are disappearing because with the exports taking place now of ethane, that is, essentially you're adding one or two more crackers to the total, and there wasn't that amount of ethane available. So the ethane prices have become become higher and more volatile than people were expecting. But essentially, what we're going to see is that more and more of that product coming in. It's disguised at the moment because what we're seeing today is that just the prices aren't moving up. So prices should be moving up because of higher oil prices, but there is no pricing power. And therefore, what we're seeing today is a bit more hidden. It's margin reduction. And some margins have gone down 50 or 60%. So there's a big hit, but it's not as obvious as if the price suddenly halves overnight.
Yeah. And then let's just look at the circular economy. This is more of a long-term theme, or is it?
I don't think it is, Will. I think that we've actually got, you can say, we don't have to do anything till 2025, but that's not true, because by 2025, we have to be able to have all packaging in Europe and globally for some of the brand owners, reusable, recyclable, or compostable. And we're nowhere near that at the moment. So we've got to develop the technology that allows that to happen. And that takes time. We've got to get the approvals necessary for it if it's new technology, new products, and so on. And you can't just turn up on the 31st of December 2024 and say, don't worry, we'll do it all next year. You're talking about millions of tons.
Yeah.
So if we don't get moving in the next 12, 18 months, then we are in trouble. But I think the signs are that the industry recognises the urgency, and there are some very big moves coming along.
Yeah.
So this is all good news. I mean, it's a big challenge, but it's the kind of challenge that the industry can cope with.
And what kind of solutions are on offer? You've got mechanical recycling and chemical recycling mainly.
That's right, and also new product development.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, if you take the example of cheese wrapping, for example, you have to be able to have an oxygen barrier and a moisture content control, which means at the moment you have two layers, which means it can't be mechanically recycled. PET bottles can be recycled because it's just one layer. Now, do you either put in a large number of small-scale chemical recycling plants and take that waste from the locals and recycle it there, or do you come up with a new polymer that combines moisture control and oxygen barrier? You know, those are the kind of things that we're going to look at and have to look at very quickly. And then once we've decided, we've got to then roll that out. That's the kind of thing that the industry is good at. So, you know.
Right. And I forgot to ask you about Brexit.
Oh, yes. Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah, if we could just forget about it and brush it under the carpet.
That's right. I mean, we're now in the end game of this.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get some kind of deal done, presumably, between the UK and Brussels. But it seems very doubtful. You know, we talk to senior politicians on the Labour and Conservative sides, and they both independently say to us, we don't think there's a majority in Parliament for any option, which takes you down a track of saying, well, if there isn't an option, if the deal that Theresa May comes back with next week from Brussels isn't accepted by the Conservative Party or by Parliament, then what happens? And, of course, the tail risk of this, and it might only be a 10% risk or a 15% risk or something, is that not only do we leave with no deal, but that the UK decides we're not going to pay the divorce bill, the £39 billion, because we, you know, well, it is actually a payment for stuff that the UK has already committed to, but it's now being turned into a down payment for a good trade deal. Now, we're in uncharted waters here. If the UK turns around and says we're not paying that £39 billion, then what happens to chemical registrations? What happens to transport? What happens to all these other things? And the really worrying thing is that, yes, the majors have done quite a lot to prepare, stockpiling, changing contracts, and so on and so forth. Only 1 in 7 of the companies in their supply chains have done anything at all. So if you're running a plant and you're reliant on someone in your supply chain, chances are they haven't done anything. It won't get through customs. So your plant will stop.
And in that Armageddon scenario, could trade more or less be prevented between
This is what Brussels has said.
Yeah.
You know, if you really don't pay the money that you owe us, well, we are not, you know, you won't get an aviation agreement, you won't, you know, reach, I mean, you interviewed the man from the European Chemicals and Health Agency, and he said, in a hard Brexit, we pull the plug.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's not an idle threat. Now, it may only be, say, 10 or 15%, but what are we doing at a G7 country getting to this kind of make-or-break moment?
With how many months to go now?
Less than six months to go. Yeah. Almost 5 months, really.
Okay.
Not a good place to be.
Well, we'll have to see what the situation is this time next year.
Indeed.
Next GCA. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Will.